Welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, your weekly dose of Porsche culture. With Tech Talk, Heritage, the Ren Builds playlists, along with a massive dollop of waffle, we'll keep you entertained. So subscribe now on any podcast streaming service and YouTube. Welcome back to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and welcome to a waffle episode. And I'll tell you why, because you'll notice that there was a gap in broadcasting for 1 week because I seem to have been struck down by every lurgy, physical or otherwise, in the last month, and I needed some time out. So last week you'd have heard the Heritage episode with Paul Layton and his absolutely incredible resto mod that came from Tut Hill. And was an unknown buy. He had no idea who he was getting himself into. And then what actually turned out in the end was just something absolutely incredible. If you haven't listened to that episode, go and listen to that. There's tons of other Heritage episodes, so go and listen to those as well. But as I said, today is a waffle episode, which means I'm joined by Mick. Mick, good morning.
Morning, sir.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yourself?
Broken.
Yeah, broken. You've been telling me, yeah.
Yeah, so I need to go to a chiropractor at lunch and get myself fixed, which is not ideal, but otherwise, mate, things are rolling on. Yeah. The truck keeps rolling, and the Coca-Cola truck has got its lights on and it's ready to depart the depot. So I can't believe how quickly this year's gone. And I'm going to do a kind of roundup towards the end of the year and kind of look at some of that successes, because it's easy to keep going and you don't look back, right? So after my Misery Guts episodes. So yeah, there's lots to celebrate. But the first thing I want to talk about is Porsche Club Great Britain and the next Rengineering live episode, which is on the 23rd of November. Where that came from is that I was at Box and Gas on the Michelin stand. The Outlaw came and was on that Michelin stand, not even finished, to be fair. So the fact that Frank invited me to that was great. And Carrie and Nick from PCGB HQ, the bosses of Porsche Club Great Britain, came over and said they loved the car and they'd love to do a feature. That then turned into, well, if actually, do you want to come do a podcast episode at Porsche Club Great Britain in Morton in the Marsh in the Cotswolds, the beautiful Cotswolds, which ended up turning into Modified Caymans. So that is the kind of premise for the session. Now I planned to kind of hold a couple of places back for anyone that wants to come that listens to the podcast. They were so keen. They put like multiple emails out and sold out every single place. I think there's 34 people coming, and then I think 30 in reserve that are waiting to come if someone drops out. So, and you got a couple of those emails, right? Because you were a PCGB member.
Yeah. So, like I said to you earlier, I know more about you lately from the Porsche Club emails than you two. So, I've had two emails recently, and they've mentioned you in both of them,
which is nice. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a member of the Porsche Club Great Britain, so I don't even know what they said about me, but I'll have a read.
You're a potential member.
I'm a potential member. A potential member. Yeah, we'll call it that.
That's how they should look at everyone with a Porsche. They should look at them as not members or non-members, members and potential members.
That's it. But that's going to be fascinating. And we've kind of got a bit of a structure now. I've sort of spoken to the chap that's organising it, John, lovely chap. He's done a ton of effort to kind of organise things and make sure that there's space. We're going to hopefully, depending on the weather, have three cars, a 718 that's really, really modified for performance, for track use. My car, obviously, and a 987 as well. So we're going to have all three generations in the building, kind of parked next to each other. And I'll do a bit of a kind of walk and tour of those cars. And then we'll get the kind of live audience effectively to kind of gather around. Although I hate the idea of people gathering around, it makes my neck itch. But that's if you're going to do a live podcast episode, you kind of need to have an audience. And then we'll kind of do a run through for them, for the audience, you know, the breakdown of the modifications and the process behind it and what we were trying to achieve by when we started out. And is that what happened at the end? The wonderful journey of modifying cars. And then we'll take a Q&A at the end. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be the third live episode this year. So again, if looking back at that, a couple of years ago, if you'd have said I'd done three separate live episodes to a live audience, I'd have probably had kittens, but here we are.
Can I make you twitch even more, Paul?
Go for it.
It's not that big, Porsche Club HQ.
It's not that. If
you're fitting three cars in there as well, with all the other stuff they've got in there, there's not a lot of room.
Is it not?
No.
Okay, all right. Well, people have to sort of stand on each other's shoulders or something and... Don't know. We'll wait and see. But if, you know, John seems quite confident. No idea. Otherwise, the weather's nice, they'll be parked out the front.
Yeah.
Apparently, again, not seen it.
So. There's a big space outside, fine. And on a Saturday. Is it Saturday? Saturday you're going, isn't it?
Saturday, yeah.
Yeah, so that when we went up on a Saturday, and there's nothing else. It's like in a business park.
Right, okay.
So there's plenty of place to park outside.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's good. So that's exciting, yeah. Mate. I'm kind of looking forward to that, and then I'm going to keep pushing PCGB for a proper sit-down chat, and I think the two of us will do that as well. On the history behind the club and where they are right now, but the vision for the future, because and this isn't the critique of PCGB, and I've said this before, but the way that people network their enthusiasts has changed since the 80s and 90s, and they were quite static, right? You'd send a newsletter out or something, you'd probably get a group together, and you'd have to post that out 2 months before, so people with the snail mail could catch people. Because now you've got social media. Someone to put a story up saying fancy meeting at Cafe in the Machine or whatever. And then by that evening, you've got a ton of people there. So clubs have to adapt to that kind of way, right? In the promotion sense. So they've kind of connected to Legends Drivers Club, who are affiliated with Rengineering as well. And you can get a 50% discount to join through Legends Drivers Club.
Really?
50%.
Why didn't I know that?
Well, I'm telling you now. So when you come to renew, go via Andre and Legends Drivers Club. Big shout out to Andre. And get your enormous discount. Yeah. So if you're listening to this and you're in the UK and you're thinking about being a member of PCGB, then head over, follow Legends Drivers Club and get in touch with Andre, and he can help you connect the dots and get that really discounted.
I'm not even sure. It's about 80 quid, 85 quid a year.
I think it is, which is quite good value, really, when you think about what you get. So interesting, and I'd love to see. I'm sure they've got a business plan. I'm sure they've kind of thought about how they're going to do this in the future, and the fact that even with Rengineering they've talked about whether there's long-term collaboration potential there. It's all to play for, I think, but excited for that, mate.
I went up to the HQ for the first time this summer. I've been a member since 2015,
since your 997.
That's right, so it's the first time I went up there. And you get a spiel from one of the club, one of the top dogs in the club.
Mm.
And we were lucky, I can't remember the guy's name, but he runs the archive bit of Porsche Club. So he's basically got loads of stuff that's been given to him and Porsche Club over the years.
Mm.
And he's archived it all in a certain way. And he's got race posters that are worth an absolute fortune.
Yeah.
He's got stuff, like Jackie Ickx race uniforms, Johnny Herbert race kit, There's also you'll be walking around with your mouth open, some stuff up there, but I didn't realise that Porsche Club was founded originally for the 356 owners. So he had all these 356s in the UK, and they put Porsche Club together so the guys could keep their 356s on the road.
Unbelievable!
Because there's loads of documentation about how to maintain, how to fix 356.
Do you know what's amazing as well?
And that's how it started. That's how it formed.
It is that back then 356s were probably not worth a lot.
No.
It'd have been one of those things like trying to run a 924 or an early 944. Yeah. They're quite often found in sheds and barns and in, various states of disarray, and actually just sharing parts and there would have probably been a lot more homebrew mechanics trying to keep those things going, because it wasn't worth spending tens of thousands of pounds getting them into Concours state now, which is, let's face it, most of those 356s now would have been through those hands, either died a death or brought back to life and now pristine. Unless it's PJ Gibbons and you run your survivor car. But for everybody else out there with the 356, Alex Nash, friend of the podcast, his car is on his second build and it's going through the workshop and kind of come out soon. So, and Paul Layton, actually, last week's guest, also got a 356 in build. So, I think actually even for those guys, having that resource now is probably still useful,
So if you want anything, when you walk in the door, just turn left. The first room on your left is their, basically their library.
Right, okay.
And they've got every single bit that's been sent out from the Porsche Club is in there.
Mm.
All the Christophus magazines, the ones that no one knows what they're for. And
I don't know.
Have you ever seen one?
No.
I'll try and dig one out for you.
Yeah, Paul. Yeah.
They're a great bit of advertising. Watches that you couldn't even afford. and everything technical that's on paper is in that room.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Along with a load of other stuff. It's fascinating.
quite useful for the 550. Yeah. Actually, I might start kind of taking some photos.
Exactly. So yeah. There's, if you get in there, you can. I sent some stuff over from the archive that I found for you.
I remember, yeah.
But
yeah.
It wasn't that relevant to what you want to do, I don't think. But I'll do some more digging.
Yeah, yeah, have a look. And the fact I'm going to be there in a couple of weeks, I'll have a look as well and see what I can find and see if I can beg for, you know, a return trip if I need proper scans and stuff. So.
But I don't know, do you know how the Porsche Club is structured, do you?
So vaguely, you've got, it's like a pyramid scheme, isn't it? You've got the like top of the tree, PCGBHQ, and then you've got regions depending on where you are in the country. Yep. And this is region 17?
17, we're southern, I think we're called 17. Right.
And then you've got registers separate to that for the vehicles themselves.
Yeah, so we got Cayman register, there was a 997 register. They've just formed a GT register.
Just
formed a GT register. Wow. Yeah, so... that at the moment, I believe, is on a WhatsApp only.
Okay.
And there's like, last time I looked a couple of weeks ago, there's 550 people on that WhatsApp
Bloody
group.
Bloody hell.
So, but that's anyone with a.
Anything.
A Spider RS.
Anything that came out
GT4, GT products. Yeah, any GTSs, anything with a GT badge. Is it? We got an email to invite us into that group.
Interesting. GTSs are included in that as well. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think I could be wrong. I think they're in there.
I would have thought it would have been GT Products Division releases only. So anything that with a GT3, 4 or Spider badge. But cool. Yeah. Good.
And there is some incredible... So I found out about the center lock recall from there.
Oh, mate. Well, actually, that
sorry,
is
Sorry, I've diverged.
No. It's an excellent opportunity to segue into the shit show that is Porsche manufacturing for parts at the moment. Look, I adore the brand. This podcast wouldn't exist if I didn't adore the brand. But you've got to call a spade, right? And in what other industry or company would it be tolerable for wheels to fall off? And it be something that people brush under the carpet or kind of don't highlight. Yeah. And realistically, I've seen one or two posts. In fact, you know, the podcast, the Instagram post at Reengineering UK, I'll share a picture of a 3RS 992 with its wheel kind of wedged into the wheel arch. It's a bit of a disaster, really. So for those of you that don't know, Mick, what has gone wrong?
So there's metal fatigue in the centre lock wheel nuts on all products with centre locks. From September 23 to October 24. So 12, 13 month period. And they've all had a do not drive notice put on them.
10,000 cars?
11,000. Worldwide, it's about 11,000 cars.
Which is not insignificant. No. That's quite a chunky number to kind of for people to have been impacted.
And,
what a shit show. Yeah. Sorry, but like, it's not. Like your PADM unit, you know, it's a bit of a pain. It's a bit annoying that you've got to drop it in at some point. And then obviously when you do some, you know, the second part goes to fit is also crap and needs to go in the bin.
We haven't said that yet. We haven't mentioned
it. Have we not? No. We'll come on to that in a sec. having said that, that's very different to, you know, having driven your car for a year, potentially, or longer, and the wheel potentially falling off. Yeah. And the cars it affects are all track cars.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to be used for like, or very rarely going to be used for Sunday driving. They're going to be spanked around the ring at 130, 140 mile an hour. So can you imagine if you were kind of flat out through dotting a hoe and then the wheel came off? Not good.
No. So apparently it's metal fatigue and you've seen some of the pictures I've seen.
Yeah.
I think Porsche Club North America were the first to put the release out. But then it slowly crept into the UK. And I posted on that GT group. I was a bit tongue in cheek, a bit cheeky. I said, on the plus side, at least we can all get track days booked up. And
when the Porsche don't have centre locks, suddenly there's going to be a ton of vacated spaces on any Porsche day or book a track or something like that. But
because I don't know what they initially they were saying spring 25 has been, but I think it might be a bit quicker than that. So they might get fixed by January.
They're bound to want to try and get.
But they've all gone to Enterprise to get high cars as well.
Have they?
So I mean, in this country because we're Northern Hemisphere, we're just coming into our winter.
Yeah.
So they're probably quite lucky that a lot of these cars will be wrapped up. So in the Southern Hemisphere, however, you're coming into
disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All these lucky people that are kind of starting to get their you know, go into spring and the weather's warming up and they're kind of dusting those cars off the first time, taking them off their CTEC chargers and, you know, checking the tire pressures and warming them up and ready to go. And then you realize you get this email or a letter come through the post that says, sorry, mate.
Yeah.
Stick it back in the garage. We'll let you know when you can come in and swap your wheels over. Disaster. And it's catastrophic. It's not a, you know, inspect and you'll kind of, if it looks like there's some spiders or something like that, then take it off. It is literally just the wheel falls off. Hmm. There we go. Let us know what you think. You can stick in the comments in Spotify. I think you can do that on Apple Podcasts as well. So are you affected by this? Do you give a shit? Does it affect your thoughts and feelings about the company? Or are you just like, at this point, you just accept it for what it is? Moving swiftly on, Mick, your PA day. I was like, no spoiler alert there, straight in. Another disaster. Minor disaster.
Getting the first part was quite a simple process. Mm. Getting booked in was a bit more difficult because we had a 10-day holiday booked in Tenerife. So we got back booked in the day we got back in the afternoon because we got delayed and we didn't get back till 3 a.m. So we were pretty tired. So I said to Moira, I said, let's drive over to Pompey, drop the car off. It's a 4-hour fix. We'll take a train into Portsmouth, go and get some nice food and do a bit of shopping in Gunwolf. So that's what we did. It's quite a nice day. It's quite dry. Drove over to Pompey, got a train in. As soon as we sat down for our meal, Porsche Centre phoned up. They were quite apologetic. The part we were about to fit, the electrical connectors were bent the wrong way round.
I mean, it's not even fail on fit. It's fail on packaging.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on QC at, you know, GmbH, Porsche, but it's not good.
So so I said, she goes, do you want me to get your hire car? I said, no, it's fine. We'll get a train home. Because she said it'll be fixed next week. So it was about 10 days later it's fixed, something like that. So it's fine.
So the car is fixed. And it's back in your custody?
Back in my custody, yeah.
Okay.
I gave it a good shakedown over the Ports Downhill. And, did you? Morstead Road.
It must have been nice. Oh, I love those roads. They're great. Yeah. Feels good?
Yeah, feels good. Feels nice and tight.
Yeah.
So it was nice to get it back. So it's...
I wonder if there's a revision. I don't know. Have you looked into
The part numbers are different. So I'm hoping that this is a fixed part now.
Okay. Because normally what happens with Porsche, again, if you listen to this and you're not quite sure, Porsche part numbers will be, you know, it's a letter and then a series of numbers. And at the very end, it's a revision number and it's A, B, C, D. So if you're on revision A, that's the first one they made. If you're on revision F, they've obviously made enough to get to F. So... quite interesting the fact that they've revised that part. Fingers crossed that'll be it for you, mate, and you can kind of consider that one put to bed.
Yeah.
Thank God for your, you know, warranty, right? Because especially if you were unlucky enough to get a 12-month warranty if you buy something from Porsche, or do you? I'll come to that in a minute. If it was out of warranty, what's the cost for that PAD?
I think it's about 1,900 quid now. It might be a bit less, but it's...
For the part?
To fit.
Yeah. Oh, right. Including fit.
So
it's still bloody expensive.
Both sides, it's like just under $4,000.
Wow.
And the extended warranty was 1,800 quid for 3 years. So.
Yeah, it's just, when you know, I guess, so here's some consumer advice, people. If you are buying a car, not necessarily even a Porsche, do your research, find out what the common faults are, and make your decision about whether you're going to do some sort of aftermarket warranty based on the likelihood of failure of those parts. Because if it's bulletproof, 981 Caymans generally are, you might want to risk it and think, actually, I'll self-insure and put the money aside in my bank and just have that as like a slush fund.
Yeah.
If there are situations like this where there are common failures and they haven't been rectified and there's a likelihood of you being impacted by that, definitely consider getting a manufacturer's warranty. Difference being, don't really, really scrutinize if you're going to buy a non-manufacturer's warranty. So I think it's like Warranty Wise and probably all sorts of different companies out there. They are not all even. They're, you know, you'll get some that will kind of pay up for pretty much anything, and you'll get others that will, you know, they wouldn't pay up if the car exploded and burnt into flames. They're just terrible. So make decisions based on that, as opposed to just either carte blanche saying, yes, I need a warranty because you might not, or just, you know, not caring and then getting stung by a $4,000 bill. Not good.
not good.
Yeah, that's really good advice. So it's, you know, don't buy the warranty because it's got a former British touring car driver and who stands up from Auto Express. Or sorry, not that. Mm. You know, buy it. Just do your research on it.
Yeah. And there are some that are kind of, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to give a recommendation because I haven't used one, but there are some genuinely pretty good purchasable insurance warranties, because all they are the polished insurance policies, and that's all they're doing is insuring the failure of parts and the cost to recover. So do your own research about which companies, but yeah, give it a thought on that. And my experiences. This was on the car at Megaphonics. I bought, and I really loved it, the 911 ST Heritage, 1967 Heritage bonnet emblem, which looks slightly different. It's all gold as opposed to kind of having black in there and bits and pieces. And the sort of dark maroon color quadrants in the actual bonnet emblem are orange. It looks really cool. I think it looks really cool. I love the fact, especially my car is a bit of a tip of the hat to kind of older Porsche. Mm-hmm. I'm on my third badge at £150 a pop.
That's not cheap.
Now, thankfully, the first one I bought, I replaced the first one because they wouldn't warranty it. They said a stone chip had hit it. It annoyed the shit out of me that they said that, because even, you know, the first badge lasted 9 years, must have had loads of stones hit it. So there's a fit for me. There was a bit of a fit for purpose argument there. You know, you should make the covering or whatever it is, the lacquer that you put on top of that, you know, not susceptible to getting damaged within one stone hitting it. By the by, I accepted that and swallowed it, bought another one. That one, the pins fell off and the whole badge flew off the car in 3 months. Now, I spoke to my very good friends at Porsche Portsmouth, and they, out of goodwill, because Porsche wouldn't cover that, gave me a free one. So I'm £450 in now, whether I've paid for it or Porsche have paid for it, on bonnet emblems. And this one has also failed. The lacquer's come off and I barely use the car. So I've gone back to my original one that lasted 9 years and still looks perfect. But it just goes to show it. And I don't know if you've got 911 ST or any of the kind of sport classics, because they're all the same. They got that 1967 emblem. Again, stick in the comments and let us know whether you've been affected by that sort of shit show of quality. That's not good enough, mate, is it?
So have you thought about going aftermarket on that? Because I know there's companies that do, and there's one of the guys I know, he recommends a company. If you want me to try and have a look into it.
I don't know.
Because this smacks of Porsche looking at
Porsche tax.
Yeah, Porsche tax, and also Porsche going, oh, these companies are making money.
We
can jump on it. Because there are various other things that we may talk about today that's exactly what they're doing.
Mm.
So they're seeing where people are making money out of a 911, for example. And they're actually, we can stop that. We can stop that at birth, if you like.
Yeah.
So we can put that in a parts catalogue.
Yeah. Yes and no. I will be completely honest. And this is going to come up at the... Yeah. Porsche Club Britain event. I've got very specific tastes. When you see some of those bonnet emblems and they're kind of like got luminous yellow in, and I just think they're disgusting. I think they're awful. I like nods to the past where it's come out of the factory. So if it looked very similar, or I could recreate something, yeah, definitely. But if it's just all sorts of random colours, because that's somebody's caliper colour, no, I just don't like them particularly. What I might do is take the one where one of those quadrants fell out, take all the quadrants out, because all they are is plastic. They're not, and then get them enameled. So they're replaced, it's still the same badge.
That's a good idea.
But just fill the kind of void up with enamel and have it fired. So it's exactly the way it should be, but it's fired enamel as opposed to a chunk of plastic that falls out every 5 minutes. So, and then even with the installation, I'm just going to modify the installation, whereas how it works is you've got these pins that stick through the bottom, it's two of them, and a little screw that comes up underneath. What I would probably do is use double-sided adhesive so that even if the pins come off, badge is stuck on the car.
Yeah.
I just shouldn't have to do that sort of thing with a factory part. You know, that stuff pisses me off.
Agree.
Yeah. Had a conversation with Chris Wright from Wright Tune. Again, a friend of the podcast that has been on the podcast. There's a tech talk recently on air-cooled engines, and he was saying the same. He's experiencing kind of very flaky QC on parts. So... I haven't got a clue what's going on. Maybe this is thinking about the time delay between production and storage and then release, maybe this was COVID related and actually some of these parts were manufactured during those times and, you know, people were obviously more focused on whether they survived rather yeah. than that production of parts. And those parts are made into circulation now, but actually the root cause time is back 3-4 years ago. Who knows? But yeah. Well, let's see. And again, let us know if you if you've been affected by any of these like shit show parts deliveries. What else is going on, Mick?
Well, I'm just thinking the we obviously had the GT3 announcements, Carrera T announcements. So
thoughts?
So if we talk about the GT3 first. Mm-hmm. Talk about, you know, Sharp Works in America.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
One of their biggest requests for a modification is back seats in a GT3.
Yes. Yeah.
So are they, again, this is like Porsche and they're making money out there.
Yeah, yeah. So RPM Technic as well, right? Yeah. So they're a Manti dealer, so they're yeah. affiliated. But yeah, go on.
So they're doing the back seats in the, is it the Touring only?
Touring only.
As long as it's not lightweight.
Correct. Yeah. So there are subtle differences. Whereas before, it really pretty much was just a wing yeah. or no wing, right? And I think they set up the PASM, you know, sport PASM yeah. system slightly differently. Now, there are significant differences. Spring rate differences, damping differences, back seats, glass. There's quite a noticeable difference between mid touring and yeah. full GT3. So.
I think with the original, the 992.1 touring, when that first came out, So one of the guys we worked with here, he had one, and he was running the tire pressure 6 or 7 bar below because it was too stiff.
So stiff. Wow.
They reckon the later ones were coming out, and they were obviously damped differently, and they can cope more with the British. He couldn't handle it, so he chopped it in.
Did he?
Yeah, he said it was too stiff for him.
Wow. I mean, you've got to hate it if it's going to be wowzers. Yeah. I mean, some of the there's another career or not. On a lot of WhatsApp groups or little groups to chat, but a couple of close friends and one of them sent me a picture of a 992.1 touring in, and I don't even know what colour it was. It must have been like a British Racing green, something similar to that, with kind of a baseball glove tan interior. And it was perfect. So for me, if I was going to buy a 992.2 with the back seats, it would be that. It would be a kind of something dark, you know, either maroon or dark green with lovely baseball bat interior and nice back seats to take kids out.
Yeah, I like the folding buckets as well. They brought those.
Oh, yeah. Totally different. Buckets, new for the 992.2.
Yeah. So they're pretty cool. So even if you haven't got the back seats, you can lob your golf clubs in the back if you play golf. So
if you play golf.
I don't play golf, but I can still lob my back.
Or even if you're just actually road tripping, you know, and you kind of...
bags in the back.
Yeah, if you're doing a long tour, and I filled up the boot and the frunk of the Cayman up to do my European tour, actually having some back seats to throw some soft bags in would have been brilliant. Yeah. So, wicked cool car though.
Yeah.
I think I prefer the .2 to the .1.
Yeah. I think so. It's an evolution, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's... And then the Carrera T obviously just come out. And
bravo, Porsche. I'm going to say it straight away.
Manual.
First thing, they've celebrated the manual, right?
Yeah.
Let's slow hand clap, everybody, for that.
Give themselves a pat on the back.
Yeah, well done. Somebody's been listening.
Because we weren't sure when they came out with the base Carrera and the GTS, whether there'd be another manual in this range.
I genuinely didn't think there would.
Yeah.
I thought that was the death of that.
And what a cool manual stick that is as well.
Yeah.
That is cool.
Dude, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to say they've looked at the Outlaw Cayman and made their decisions based on that. However, there are many things that are very similar between my car. I'm joking. There's no way they've even noticed me. But seat centres are in a fabric.
Yeah.
They are touring seats. So they're not the kind of full buckets that are touring seats. I think probably optioned the buckets again. But they're lovely. Kind of a dark blue tartan colour.
Yeah.
The side decals are again tied into the blue. The wheels have got like a bluish hue to the outside of those. The gear stick has got a wooden top to it. And in white, it's pure white as well. So basically my car in 992.2.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first thing I noticed was a gear stick. And yeah.
What are your thoughts on it?
I think it looks cool. I know you've had your issues with the Carrera T before, but I really liked it. Not sure about soft top though in the Carrera T.
Well, that's the kind of the bit that I just was like, how did someone make that? That's to me is an accountant's decision. That's got nothing to do with the guys behind it going, this is what a T should be.
I hope it's an accountant's decision. I really hope it's an accountant's decision.
How can we squeeze an extra 50 quid out of somebody? Yeah. I mean, it just goes against the entire principle, doesn't it, really, to throw a soft top on it.
Yeah. But no, I was chuffed to bits when I saw it. And,
I even got, chapeau. Punchy.
Yeah.
I'm going to reach out to Porsche Reading and see if I can get one. For a review, because I really want to know whether it drives as well as it looks. Because if you were going to buy a modern car and you can't afford a GT3 or get on the allocation for a GT3, that's got to be it, right?
Yeah.
Because let's face it, once those things are out of warranty, a quick trip to Litchfield and you got yourself 500 and something brake horsepower, if that's what you're after is huge power, you could have a T with huge power. So, yeah, I think that there's a few things I would do. Brake calipers, I would, if they don't do them, I'd have them painted in the same blue to match the rest of the blue on the car.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, they don't. They leave them that kind of anodized finish, that grey anodized finish on Ts. Because it's supposed to be a base car, a very, very basic car. So there's a few bits and pieces I'd do. But other than that, I think that car just is out of the box great.
Yeah.
Brilliant. There's one question, and I don't know how I'd have to find out whether this is true or whether someone's bullshitted their way. It's a 6-speed manual, not a 7-speed.
Not a 7-speed. I say, so they've gone for the GT.
Well, that's the thing, is some people have been saying that it's the 7-speed box with the 7th locked out. So you just don't have that overdrive, effectively, that kind of sticky in 7th and cruise, because that's all that 7th gear.
Did you ever use 7th gear in yours?
For a trip and down the long motorway journeys. Yeah. And all it did is just knock it, it's just knocked you down to like 2000 RPM at 80 mile an hour. So you just do some eco cruise mode. I didn't ever use it as a kind of, going through the gears, I'd use the first 6 and then that'd be it. 7th is just an overdrive. Yeah. So it's not, you're not losing a lot by losing that gear. I just struggling to know whether, if that's even true, which I don't know, it's speculation. I'd be interested to know how anyone would. Andreas Pruninger is not going to, it's not a GT product, right? So he's not going to be pimping it out. But I'd love to know from somebody whether that's true or not. Very odd decision. Just a branding thing, isn't it?
Yeah, who knows?
6-speed H-band, but yeah.
I mean, while we're talking about gearing, the GT3 comes in manual or PDK.
Yeah.
They've dropped the gear ratios by 8%.
Have they?
So it's the same as the ST. So they've dropped them. But I still think it's still quite long geared.
I'd need to drive one, mate.
Sorry, that's manual, not PDK. So they dropped the gear ratios by 8% in manual.
And that's been a consistently kind of fed back bit of, all the journos have said, amazing car. How are they still using such long gear ratios?
Mm-hmm.
What's yours like, mate?
So it's second gear, 76 mile an hour.
Mine's the same. I think mine's 74.
So I'm a great believer in every car, character in a car comes from its flaws.
Yeah.
So, from my Subaru days where, big turbo, massive lag.
Yeah.
The funniest thing you could do is put your foot down, nothing happens, and bang.
And off
then Armageddon. And it's like this in second gear's long. But it makes me laugh when I'm driving along, and I know I can go up to 76 in second gear.
Mm.
It's just flaws in the car give it character. That's how I look at it.
I think you're right. And actually, I was thinking about it because I was, when I was kind of thinking about putting the Outlaw Cayman together, I spoke to Lydia at RPM Technic and they do a Cranberry and Opinion reductions just so your gear's lower, basic gear, your output gears are lower. And I really considered it's like 6,500 quid, 7 grand, something like that. And it completely cures that problem, just shifts everything down slightly. And then I thought, A, that's a lot of money and there's better things to spend that money on. B, tunnel runs for me, if it's like a 100k limit or 50, 60 mile an hour limit or whatever it is, I quite like sitting in second gear and just winding it through the rev range and letting it drop back and then winding it back up through the rev range. If I've lost the ability, if that cutover point is at 60 miles per hour, suddenly I'm changing gear and actually that's not what I want. I just like want it to like whip up and then crack back. And so, I think there's an argument if you're going to track it and you kind of want to be in and out of gears constantly, then fine, yeah. Around the boat. But yeah, it's not, I don't know. It's a lot of money to spend on something that's
kind of... It's breaking that gearbox from the engine as well, isn't it?
You know, yeah, so. For the first time. I'd do it a clutch change. Yeah. If there's a reason to start stripping it out, then fine. But yeah, I don't know.
I mean, so, fair play to some of these guys that get these brand new GT4s and first thing they do is put a lightweight flywheel in and then they change the gear. And I'm like, you're breaking that gearbox from the engine. And I just...
Everything's tight. Yeah, everything's never been apart. And yeah. It'll never be the same again. Yeah. And I guess Matt Farr is kind of the one that kind of did that first, right? Is he took his Spider Strawberry Shortcake, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. He's got a really nice... it's lovely. It's a really cool car. And I can't remember what the company is he sent it to, but again, someone will be screaming down the podcast now. Sent it off to a company and immediately had this enormous, like, 480 brake build thrown into it. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. But again, it's never going to go back. You've got to, that's your commitment into that car because it's never retailable through an official channel by that point. This,
yeah.
So I think one came up as well on Bring a Trailer that had that same kind of build, and it went for marginally more than a standard car, but it had 50,000 quid put in it. So a lot of money to spend to only kind of keep a car for a short amount of time before you're sending it on.
Yeah.
Think about these modifications, guys. Next piece of consumer advice. Likelihood is, if whatever money you spend on modifications, unless by some miracle you've chosen things that don't devalue the car, the likelihood is you're going to come out net with a car that is not modified or, if anything, lose a little bit. So there's very few cars out there you can do stuff to. Alphaholics, GTAs, things like that. Or, you know, if you're a professional tuner and you built a package and then you sell that as a package, obviously there's value to that. Litchfield is a great example of that with Scoobies and all sorts of bits and pieces. If you're going to get a UK 300 Scooby, you're going to pay a bit more for that stuff. But for the most part, me included, if I was to sell the Outlaw Cayman, I would never recover what I spent on it. Not in a million years.
I mean, if the parts are reversible, you could
if they
you
are,
could, you
yeah,
could, you could probably make a bit of your money back.
Stripping the car, putting it back to standard. Yeah. I mean, I've never done that. I've always sold on the parts that I've taken off the car to try and claw some money back that I've spent on the car. And it doesn't matter to me if I'm never selling it. So
apart from the time you sold it.
Apart from the time I sold it, I bought a Carrera T, then sold the Carrera T 2 months later and then bought back my Cayman. Well-documented journey there. Actually, that's a good point. Those episodes kind of bringing you from kind of, the halfway house, pre-interior basically, to almost complete, are going to come out by Christmas. Had a meeting with Goldie Performance yesterday on the intake. My intake, unfortunately, is pushed back into the new year now. So the car's going to be complete for next year's show season, but it's not going to be complete for this Christmas. We're just hoping to kind of produce a, you know, it's done episode, which is not, because it's going to just delay in that kind of build process with Goldleaf. But those guys are amazing. Absolutely amazing. They produce some incredible stuff. They're working their asses off as well. I can do more on Goldleaf. And there's an episode with them, a whole podcast episode, Tech Talk, on the carbon fiber inbox intake from a 4S. You can put on any 981 or 718 Cayman. So unfortunately, Mick, it would mean your car looking a little bit like a GT4 RS if you did that. And I don't think you could stomach being 92 years old. I don't think you could stomach...
Not that noise.
Yeah.
I'd love to see you do a Harry Metcalf.
I should.
Like we added the DB meter.
The DB meter, yeah.
Was it 116 or 120 something in the GT4
like
RS?
Yeah, I mean, like ludicrous, yeah. It's you could probably, in 20 years' time, there's probably a class action lawsuit in there against Porsche for permanent tinnitus.
Hey?
Sorry, what did you say? Yeah, but yeah, we'll see. I'm super excited by it. And that car is used on road trips, obviously, but it's not my daily. So like, I'm more than happy to kind of take the piss a little bit with what it sounds like. I guess probably we should start looking to wrap the episode up, but just want to give a shout out. I want to give a shout out to Alpine and, again, friend of the podcast, Nathan, who's probably just about recovered from his hangover.
I doubt it.
He's probably still feeling a little bit tepid. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they second and third place, mate, from nowhere. So
they did brilliant. And it was an amazing race. I mean, the qualifying. So I was on a Saturday night shift and I thought, I'll get home and watch the qualifying.
Yeah.
I get home, Connor messaged me and he said, qualifying was cancelled and it's on at half 10 this morning.
Right.
Because of the rain.
I need to go to bed.
So. Yeah, so I went to bed, got up at half 10, and then it was like five red flags in qualifying. Didn't not have a clue what was going on. Basically what happened, Max Verstappen qualified 12th, but he had a five-place group penalty.
Yeah.
Lando Norris first and George Russell second. So it was like, okay, Lando's going to make a load of points up today. Mm. And then the heavens opened again, and it was just...
They're my favourite races, mate.
Yeah.
You know?
It was, you know, I watched it, and I'm like, I don't know what happened. How did... And it's basically, there's a virtual safety car came out for... Hülkenberg beached it at turn one.
Mm.
Virtual safety car came out. Most of them pitted, apart from both Alpines and Max Verstappen. Then it downpoured, and then Colapinto binned it in the wall, and then there was a red flag. So basically, the team that didn't pit have now got a free pit stop under the red flag.
Yeah.
Rightly or wrongly, and it's debated.
I'm sure there's people kicking off all over
the place. It's been debated for years whether they should be allowed to change tyres or not under a red flag, but it's the rules.
Yeah.
And so that's what happened, and that's how Max basically overtook Ocon, I think it was.
Mm.
He won, and Ocon and Gasly were second and third. Brilliant.
But just...
From Alpine, that is massive for them. That's a huge payday.
It's not... I mean, again, it's one thing, I guess, watching this stuff. It's another thing when you've got friends that are kind of... You know, you've seen them struggle through the year. You know, they've... Alpine are consistently being the fastest pit times.
Yeah.
But even with that, there's only so much you can do. And if either the drivers can't perform of the day or the car is not quick enough, it's just not competitive, there's nothing you can do other than to try and chip away and keep doing your best. So to see, I love an underdog story. I'm always going to love an underdog story. So anything like that, you can imagine the Drive to Survive episode that's going to be kind of talking about this.
Well, especially at the start of the season, they were nowhere. They had their car was overweight.
Yeah.
So they had to, I can't remember how, what, 30, 40 kilos they had to lose, something like that. I might be wrong there, but... they were overweight anyway, and to come through, and they've got quite a competitive car now.
Mm.
Obviously, not up there with the Red Bulls, the Ferraris, the McLarens, or the Mercedes, but they're probably the next best.
Yeah,
you know, so
they're doing
really well. So it's
all credit. So Nathan, congratulations. Going to see you at Christmas anyway. We've agreed that you'll come back for Christmas and we'll do something then. So.
Connor said he saw him jumping up, and when they came across the line out there, the whole Alpine team were on a pit wall.
I bet, jumping up and down.
I couldn't see him. It was like carnage of blue and purple.
I bet, yeah.
I just couldn't see him, but Connor said he
saw
him.
It means so much, doesn't it, when you kind of bust your ass all year and then you just get that kind of one thing, all the stars aligned and you get, you know, I'm sure that they were celebrating that as much as they would celebrate a win. I mean, it's just so big. So it's back to the Jensen Button kind of brawn victory, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like, nothing.
I think it's bigger.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I think it's bigger because this moves them above Haas, I think.
Mm.
So, you know, money financially, that's a massive...
Yeah.
For them for next season.
And sponsorship for next season, right? So, you know, if you're a backmarker or kind of mid-back, it's hard to keep your car, you know, even if you're backed by a manufacturer, it's still hard to keep your car going. If you've had something like a second and third, a double podium, you're not going to struggle for sponsors the following year, which means you've got more cash investment, which you can do more development through the winter. So you might even see, you know, a great start for Alpine next year. Anyway, really happy. And obviously Connor as well, he's jumping around because he's had another good weekend. So.
Yes.
two friends of the podcast, both did very well the weekend. Yeah. So
Vegas next.
Vegas next.
Which was a brilliant race last year.
Mm.
So, brand new race, but it was a brilliant race last year. So.
Good. Mick, thank you so much for joining.
No worries.
We're at 46 minutes, which is perfect for a Whopper episode. Go on,
one more thing. So, I forgot to mention about this WhatsApp group, the GT thing I'm on.
Oh, yeah.
There's a couple of stories came out last couple of days. There are GT4 RSs, brand new, in some dealerships at list, maybe under list.
Wow.
So, I think there was one at Bournemouth and maybe one at Chester, but they've obviously, with the financials and interest rates and stuff like that,
people are stepping out of them a bit.
They've obviously cancelled orders. So.
Wow. So if last public service announcement that you're going to get from this episode is if you've been thinking about a GT3, there are options available for you. Go and do some research, get on some WhatsApp groups.
Well, definitely GT4 RS.
GT4 RS.
I'm not sure about the GT3.
Probably,
if you've got a... 153k line under your settee. Pop down to Bournemouth.
And you may do. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we'll wait and see. But yeah, thank you ever so much for joining us. I'll be back next week. Mick won't, not next week, but there'll be another Waffle episode coming up very soon. Take care of yourselves. Make sure if you get an opportunity to go out and drive, do that. If you don't, go and hang out with some mates, talk about engineering. You can like, follow, subscribe and share. Do all that stuff. It really helps the channel. And we'll see you next time. Take care for now. Bye-bye.
Bye.